Thank you, and thank you all for joining this call on very short notice. As you know, I do not need to go into much detail. This is about USDA's announcement that a case of BSE was identified in the state of California. Again, I apologize for the short notice, but you do have a great and rare opportunity to hear from one of the industry's leading animal health experts. That's Dr. Guy Lonergan. He's an epidemiologist and professor of food safety and public health at Texas Tech University. With that said, it's my pleasure to introduce to you Dr. Guy Lonergan.
Thank you very much. I would like to make a couple of comments just as we begin this. First of all, we are very early into the epidemiological investigation, as Dr. Clifford outlined this morning. We do know a few things. Firstly, that this case was in a dairy cow in Central California. The animal was presented to rendering, which means a couple of important things. First of all, none of the animal entered the human or pet food supply. So we should realize that this animal did not enter the human food supply. And the other thing that I think we ought to make mention of is that this really does illustrate that our surveillance system is working very well. As we know, BSE is an extremely rare occurrence in the U.S., and the surveillance system has been designed specifically to identify these very rare events when they do occur. And so I think it is worthwhile mentioning that the surveillance system appears to be working the way it's intended to, and that, as we know, the U.S. has a very low rate of BSE, and this has resulted from a number of steps that have taken place over the years. Before I get into that, I would like to say, first of all, that BSE, since its discovery in the late 80s in the UK, a tremendous amount of scientific knowledge has been generated about this. And most importantly, we now know, and we know how to effectively control BSE, both within animals to prevent and protect the animals, the cattle populations, but we also know how to protect the human populations. And this scientific knowledge has resulted in a series of interlocking firewalls. And I think the event today highlights the fact that these firewalls that have been put into place by a variety of USDA and FDA agencies are working, and they're working effectively well. And I think what we can take away from this is that the U.S. beef supply, as well as the milk supply, that the U.S. beef and milk supply is safe. And finally, the last comment I would say is that the USDA announced that this case today is what we would call an atypical case. And the difference between what we would classify as a classical BSE versus atypical BSE is based on what is very much like a DNA fingerprint. It's technically a protein fingerprint, but they just vary very slightly. And what we do know is that the firewalls that we have established to put in place to control and protect us and the cattle population from classical BSE work to protect the cattle population as well as the human population from atypical BSE. With that, I would be happy to try and answer any questions. Again, we're very early in the epidemiological investigation, and as that unfolds, I'm sure we'll have more information from the USDA as well.
And our first question comes from a line of Brian Salvage from the Meat and Poultry Magazine. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you. Dr. Lonergan, the one question I have at this point is, in the past when we've had fines like this and there was no threat to meat safety, the U.S. beef industry still suffered a lot because a lot of countries all of a sudden put the brakes on beef exports. Does the beef industry expect that to happen again this time? And if so, what can be done to quickly rectify the situation?
Well, I can't speak for individual countries, but I can speak to the World Organization for Animal Health, which has been updating its code of how to safely trade in animals as well as animal products. And it has established mechanisms by which the countries that are part of that organization can effectively and safely trade in beef in the event of BSEs. And those regulations or recommended regulations have been updated as the scientific knowledge grows. And more countries are now adhering to those OIE regulations. And the USDA, for example, is one of those countries that have developed mechanisms that allow the trade in beef and beef products safely, as well as animals safely, around the world. So I am hopeful that as more countries have signed on to and implemented those regulations from the World Organization for Animal Health, that there'll be less disruption of trade in events like this. Because what this really is the result of a very active, very targeted, and very expansive surveillance program to find these rare events. It does not represent an animal health concern, and it does not represent a public health concern. So I'm hopeful that more and more countries are implementing the OIE regulations or the World Organization for Animal Health, and so there'll be less disruption in trade.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And our next question comes from the line of Doug Rich from the High Plains Journal. Please proceed, sir.
Dr. Lonergan, you mentioned that this was an atypical case. How often do we see atypical cases? Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, absolutely. So, again, the atypical case varies slightly from what we would call the classical case, based on its fingerprint, and that is akin to a DNA fingerprint. This is actually a protein fingerprint, if you will. And worldwide, while there's been in excess of 180,000 classical cases of BSE, and the vast majority of them have been in the UK, worldwide there have been a little more than 60 cases of what we would call atypical BSE. If we just focus in on the US, the U.S. has detected four cases of BSE, the first one in 2003, one in 2005, one in 2006, and obviously the one today. And three of those four, the latter three, have all been this atypical case, atypical strain of BSE. So it is a very rare form of BSE. I think the important point is that the controls that have been developed to control classical BSE are also extremely effective at controlling and will prevent and protect the animal and human population from atypical BSE.
Our next question comes from a line of Steve Kay of the Cattle Buys Weekly. Please proceed, sir.
Hi, Guy. Following up on the last question, you answered some of what I was thinking of, because it seems like the fact that this is an atypical case is pretty important. As Dr. Clifford said, it's very likely not conveyed through or transmitted through infected feed. Do you know, firstly, because you mentioned the 60 cases worldwide, do you know by chance how many of the 29 cases worldwide last year were atypical?
Steve, I don't know the answer to that latter part of that question. I think it is important to note that BSE is not contagious, and what that means is it's not spread by casual contact between animals.
Right.
And the only way in nature that we know that classical BSE has been spread is through the feed. And obviously that tells us how to effectively control it in animal populations.
Right.
In terms of the atypical BSE, it's just so rare that our understanding of the feed transmission or the potential for it is more limited. But certainly there is the possibility that it is not transmitted through the feed, and it is just a spontaneous event within the animal, because most of the atypical cases that have been identified are in much older animals. In the cases in the U.S., the two previous atypical cases were in quite old animals. So it could be that this is just a sporadic, spontaneous event that occurs extremely rarely in older animals.
Right. Right. And you've almost answered my question. I mean, do you think are we any closer, Guy, after all these years of finding perhaps a number of factors or commonalities as to what has caused these 60 cases of atypical as distinct from the classic?
Well, I think that's a very good question. People certainly will speculate quite a bit about that, and I certainly don't want to add to the speculation. But the most commonly proposed one is that it is a spontaneous event. If you look at the 60 cases that occur around the world, they appear to occur quite randomly. and are independent of a BSE epidemic, say in Europe, where they have sufficient numbers of cases to epidemiologically model the epidemic. The atypical cases occur independent of that, which would indicate that it is distinct from the BSE epidemic and may actually be a spontaneous, extremely rare event in older animals.
That's really the that's the kind of the pattern, though. It's not really getting us any closer to saying what occurs, except to use the word spontaneous. I mean, there aren't any physiological or climatic or any other factors that may have occurred. And you probably know where I'm coming from. There were theories in the early 1980s, because I was working in Britain then, there was a Somerset farmer who swore that it was the use of organophosphates on dairy cattle that precipitated some of the first BSE cases. You know, that was manganese, and all kinds of other theories, you know.
Steve, I really don't know the answer to that. There certainly has been a lot of speculation from the organophosphates to specific genotypes, but we don't have a good answer. And since it is such a rare occurrence, we may never get to the answer. But at least we do know how to effectively control BSE, and the safeguards we have in place appear to be working extremely effectively.
Right. Would you be surprised if this atypical case was in a younger dairy cow rather than an older one? Or?
Steve, it's too early to speculate about the age of the animal. Certainly the majority of the atypical cases have been in much older animals, and that would be the expectation here. But certainly we have to let the epidemiological investigation unfold.
Thanks a lot, Guy.
Thanks, Steve.
Our next question comes from the line of Jim Avila of ABC News. Please proceed, sir.
My question is that if we know that it doesn't come, or it's illegal at least to feed these animals from the feed that was banned, and if it's not transmitted from animal to animal, then is it a mystery to scientists at this point how these animals come up with this disease, or is there some leading theory at this point?
Well, I think that's a very good question, and that's similar to the discussion we just had with Steve, is that these atypical cases are extremely rare. There's been less than 70, approximately a little more than 60 worldwide, and there is speculation about what may contribute to their development. Some people have speculated that a particular genotype or a particular type of gene may contribute to that. To my knowledge, I don't think we're actually any closer to understanding this, although there is some speculation that this may be just a spontaneous, extraordinarily rare event in older animals. Those sorts of understandings of how those very rare events happen are extremely complex to understand scientifically. And so it's not necessarily that the question is not necessarily why aren't we any closer. I think that there is a lot of very good scientific groups around the world working on this question at the moment. It's just going to take some time. And given the rarity of this, we actually may never get to completely understanding how this rare event happens. But again, I would add that regardless of whether we completely understand this atypical BSE to the nth degree, may be less important than the fact that we do understand how to effectively control it, how to protect the animal populations from spread, as well as protect them, as well as how to protect the human population through the controls. And I think that's the key point here.
Thank you. And our next question comes to the line of Katie Misick of DTN. Please proceed.
Hi, thank you for holding this call. My question, could you summarize a little bit about the controls that the U.S. has in place to detect BSE?
Well, there's a series of controls to prevent BSE, whereas there's a program to detect it as well. So, for instance, as soon as BSE was discovered and the epidemic was identified in the UK in the late 80s, very early on, the USDA put in an import prohibition that prevented animals from affected countries entering the U.S. And then expanded that to prevent animal feedstocks, particularly meat and bone meal, from entering the U.S. So those were some of the early controls that were put in place relatively early. They appeared to be very effective. The FDA developed a ruminant meat and bone meal ban. That has since been updated and strengthened over time as additional scientific knowledge has expanded. The USDA Food Safety Inspection Service has mandated the removal of what we would call specified risk materials. They are the tissues within the animals where BSE has been demonstrated. And again, we understand that BSE is an extraordinarily rare event in the U.S., but as an abundance of caution, all of those tissues are removed from those animals, the specified risk materials, and they're prevented from entering the human food supply. On the still on the FDA front, in conjunction with the CDC, the FDA has limited people who lived in the UK during the peak of the epidemic from donating blood and other tissues. So if you look at those all together, in addition to the fact that every animal is inspected to be healthy before it enters a harvest or slaughter facility, and then throughout the production system, all of the animals, the carcasses, are inspected at multiple times as well. And if you look at those collectively, those are the controls that have effectively protected and both the animal as well as the human populations in the U.S. And again, those controls are updated with an additional scientific understanding, and the central repository for those controls is with the World Organization for Animal Health, and they update their guidelines on how to safely trade in both live animals as well as beef and beef products. And the U.S. regulations reflect what the international community has said as best practices. So those would be just a summary of what is done both in the U.S. as well as internationally.
Thank you.
Oh, in addition, excuse me, I forgot to mention the surveillance program. The USDA, for the last 20 years or so, has had a surveillance program to detect BSE. That surveillance program has been, again, updated and modified as additional scientific as well as epidemiological data are added to it. There was a 18-month, very intensive enhanced surveillance program where approximately 700,000 at-risk animals were surveilled. And since that, since 2006, approximately 40,000 of these so-called at-risk animals, those would be the ones that died on farm or a downers, or a distressed or diseased, 40,000 per year are sampled and surveilled for BSE. So I think the event today tells us a number of things. First of all, that those control mechanisms that have been in place across a variety of agencies are working, and that the surveillance system designed to detect these rare events is also working.
And our next question comes from the line of Sarah Brown of the Beef Today magazine. Please proceed.
What is the timeline moving forward? How long will it take to do some of these investigations? And will there be, you know, how long before we see a quarantine of the original farm and things like that? How long does some of this testing take for us to kind of move forward, on the animal health side of the situation?
I think that's an excellent question. I can't answer that to the detail that you would hope for. I'm not part of the investigation, and the USDA is responsible for that. That investigation will follow what is recommended largely by the international community in response to discovery of a case of identifying the herd of origin of that cow, of that animal in California. I don't know if it's a cow or not. I'm just assuming that. But the animal in California, they'll identify the herd of origin. They will identify the year in which the animal was born, and then they will do a trace forward of all the birth cohorts of that animal. to identify where those animals are, if they're still living, and to monitor those animals and evaluate them for evidence of disease. They'll also do feed investigations of the dairy where the animal's born and raised, and that all takes a considerable amount of effort and may take a certain amount of time. I really don't know the answer to that. As that unfolds, though, I'm confident that we'll get regular updates from the USDA on their epidemiological investigation. So I'm sorry I can't provide you more timeline specifics, but I can tell you what they will be doing.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Our next question comes from a line of Brian Salvage from the Meat and Poultry Magazine, and this is a follow-up question.
Lonergan, my question would be, do you know or are you aware of industry plans in terms of letting customers and consumers know about the safety of the situation? The one fear that lingers in my mind with the recent lean, finely textured beef situation, where some say responses came way too late and ended up damaging that industry. Is there a plan in place to discuss what we're discussing now, but with the consumers and customers?
I would prefer to refer that question to NCBA.
Okay.
Brian, this is Mike Deering. We have Colin Whittle, Vice President of Government Affairs for NCBA, who can comment on that.
Brian, thanks for the question. That is a good question, and one that we are watching very closely and trying to respond to. We are doing several things. One, of course, is trying to make sure that our members are as prepared as possible, because what we find a lot of times on issues like this is that customers will ask their neighbors. We want to make sure that those neighbors who are cattle producers are prepared to talk about this. And probably the biggest tool that we have right now is the use of social media, to make sure that we use our tools such as Twitter and Facebook and our website to get the facts as far and wide as we possibly can. And another reason why we're having this press conference, to make sure that you guys are well aware of the situation from our perspective. So it's about trying to hit as many media outlets as possible to make sure that the consumers know that the beef remains safe, and that this is a great example of how all of the programs that we have, the interlocking firewalls that Dr. Lonergan was talking about, do work to protect this industry, because this is really an animal health issue, not a food safety issue, and I think that this is a great example of how that's worked.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of J.T. Smith from the Farmer Stockman magazine. Please proceed.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Lonergan, mine's a little quicker question. The case in 2003, day before Christmas Eve, that was a dairy cow in, up there in Washington State, and this was a dairy cow, and you said there have been four confirmed cases now. Have they all been dairy cows?
The answer is no. So you're right. The first case in 2003 was a dairy cow. That was a classical BSE case. The latter three are all been atypical cases, and the two before this were in beef herds, one in Texas and one in Alabama.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And our next question comes on the line of Tony St. James from All AG All Day. Please proceed, sir.
Hey, Guy, already a big social media reaction to the story. With all the social media reaction, what would you consider the most common misconceptions regarding BSE?
Well, that's an excellent question, Tony. I think the most common misconception is that it is a food safety concern. The programs that the U.S. has put in place across the variety of agencies have effectively prevented and protected the human food supply in the U.S. The other misconception is that this represents an ongoing threat to animal health, and it does not. This is an isolated event, and it tells me a couple of things. One is that the active surveillance system to identify these rare events is working, and given that this surveillance system is working and we can identify these extremely rare events, that the programs that are in place also effectively protect animal health in the U.S.
Our next question is a follow-up question from the line of Steve Kay of Cattle Buys Weekly. Please proceed, sir.
This is a very quick follow-up for Guy, but firstly, I wanted to say to Colin, perhaps part of NCBA's efforts should be to educate futures traders about what obviously was a knee-jerk reaction. They put the futures down the limit today, as we all know, before USDA had even confirmed the case. Guy, of the 40,000 sampled every year, have you got any idea of a breakdown about where those samples are taken? Obviously, this one was taken at a rendering plant. Do you have any breakdown?
Steve, I do not have a breakdown of that, and
okay.
I'm sure USDA has a breakdown of that.
Yeah,
if I can add
you.
To... Yeah, and if I can add to Colin's comment, Dr. Clifford today in his call did mention that they are reaching out to obviously all the U.S. Partners in export of beef to make sure that they're abreast of this situation and what it means so that there's less disruption of trade. So there certainly is that going on as well too, Steve.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Michelle Rook from WNAX Radio. Please proceed.
I'm wondering if we know yet if there will be any disruption of the efforts to move Japan from 20 to 30 months because of this.
I'm not in a position to answer that. I'm not involved in those negotiations. I'm sorry, I can't answer that question.
Thank you, Guy. Again, I will pass this over to Colin Whittle, Vice President of Government Affairs here at NCBA. Colin?
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for the question. That is definitely one of our top concerns as to what will be the international market reaction. So far, there has not been a reaction, which has been very pleasing for us. We have been in contact with our trading partners and their diplomatic staffs here in the United States. We also know that USDA has been doing some very active research. And so right now, we have no indication that there will be any reaction as far as closing down, shutting down markets, restricting markets, or stopping any further discussion such as the ones that we have right now with the Japanese.
Thank you all for joining this call. Since we have no further questions, we will go ahead and wrap up.